of mundane characteristics. So, translation, or sorry, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Okay, perfect. There are many impersonal statements about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as stated in the Svetasvatara Upanishad. Apanipado javano grahita pasyat yachuksha sashrinota kamaha saveti vedyam nachatasya statveta tam ahur agriyam purusham mahantam. Although the Supreme Lord is described as having no hands and legs, He nonetheless accepts all sacrificial offerings. He has no eyes, yet He sees everything. He has no ears, yet He hears everything. When it is stated that the Supreme Lord has no hands and legs, one should not think that He is impersonal. Rather, He has no mundane hands or legs like ours. He has no eyes, yet He sees. This means that He does not have mundane, limited eyes like ours. Rather, He has such eyes that He can see past, present, and future. Everywhere, in every corner of the universe, and in every corner of the heart of every living entity. Thus, the impersonal descriptions in the Vedas intend to deny mundane characteristics in the Supreme Lord. They do not intend to establish the Supreme Lord as impersonal. Om Agnati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Militangena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manu Bishtam Stapitam Gena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Gurun Shri Yuta Parakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurange Radhe Vrindavanishwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Adi Priye Vanchakalpa Tadubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Zaddi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So, I will just share my screen. Please bear with me for one moment. And as we do this. Okay, so that should be all good. Jayo, all good? You can see on that side everything? perfect. Okay. So thank you all very much again for being present for this class, taking your valuable time to be here. I'm sure there are so many things you could be doing on a Sunday morning other than attending. So it's wonderful that you have decided to tune in to this talk on Chaitanya Charitamrita. And this morning we're going to be discussing about Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, his teachings, and his transformation, as discussed from this verse of Chaitanya Charitamrita. I find with the Chaitanya Charitamrita that it's really powerful for us to recognize the pastime that's occurring, and of course, the different personalities involved in the relationships, because Chaitanya Charitamrita is really, really about, in essence, the relationships, because Lord Chaitanya is non-different from Krishna himself, but he's come in a specific mood, and that mood is the mood of a devotee. And therefore, he is teaching us in every way how to be a perfect devotee of the Lord. So therefore, it's important for us to see and understand these different pastimes, not just from purely a kind of philosophical perception or aspect or perspective, but also to look deeply into the personalities that are involved and the way that the Lord conducts himself within these pastimes. So with that, I hope that I have all of your blessings to continue and that this presentation will make some sense. Okay, so the first thing that we will do is look at a little bit of the history of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And some of you may already be very familiar with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and who he is. I personally find that amongst the innumerous personalities that the Lord associates with, it's often very difficult to remember so much about any or all of them. So it's always good to review and go over these things. So first we can understand that from Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami's perspective, later in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, or actually rather earlier in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is described that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is actually one of the biggest branches of the tree of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami mentions that of those devotees who had already gone to Jagannath Puri before Lord Chaitanya arrived there, of which there were quite a few, that of them, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was the most prominent and considered the most important. So this is really important for us to understand that there's going to be the Leela of the Lord that is conducted with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, but the underlying essence of who he is, we have to understand that he is one of the greatest devotees of Lord Chaitanya. And he appeared in a small town known as Vijayanagara, which is near Navadvip. I think it's about 1 or 2 miles away from Navadvip. And he was born in a very aristocratic Brahmin family. So he was therefore Brahmin. And he was born with the name, actually, of Vasudev. So in some places, they refer to him as Vasudev Sarvabhauma. In other places, they refer to him as Vasudev Bhattacharya. So like that, this is his appearance. And he was really, from a young age, understood to be an amazing and brilliant scholar. So in some places, it's explained that he went to Mithila in Bihar in order to study Nyaya, or philosophy, under one of the most reputed teachers of that time, Prakshadara Mishra. Now, it's explained that at that time that Sarvabhauma was going to study and prepare himself that Mithila was the kind of center for learning in India, and it had an amazing reputation. And because of that, anyone who came from outside of Mithila to study there, it's described that they were not given the actual books of Shastra, for the textbooks for learning, because the teachers and the brahmanas there, they didn't want Mithila to become surpassed anywhere else. So they made sure that they kept all of the knowledge and information there in Mithila in Bihar. But it's explained that because of his exalted nature and quality, Sarvabhauma was able to memorize all of the textbooks verbatim. And after he left, he was able to then write all of those down. So because of this exalted nature of his learning, after he went back to Navadvip, he actually established, he was one of the personalities, the founders who established Navadvip to be the center of learning. And under his tutelage and guidance, he erected and established so many different schools. Because of this, King Prataparudra, who we know is also an exalted devotee and is the king of Orissa and oversees the Jagannath Puri temple, he had heard about Sarvabhauma and he recognized his greatness. And in that way, he invited him to become the chief scholar of his administration in Jagannath Puri and to begin to train and teach many people under him. In one sense, the unfortunate thing is that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had been influenced by the impersonalist philosophy, and therefore his teachings were coming from Shankaracharya's commentaries on the Vedanta Sutra. So in this way, basically he was teaching and presenting Mayavad philosophy. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was a grihastha. But after moving to Jagannath Puri, he took what is known as Kshetra Sannyas. And that means that he renounced ever leaving Jagannath Puri and agreed to always stay fixed there in Jagannath Puri. So in this way, he was very much fixed in Jagannath Puri in the service of King Prataparudra and had the exalted service of being the chief teacher or tutor amongst many, many scholars. Unfortunately, he was teaching Mayavad philosophy, which we'll come to a bit later. But it's important to also understand that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was formerly Brihaspati, the guru of the gods. So this is given in the Gaura Ganudesh Deepika, where it is explained the different personalities from Krishna Leela and who they are in Gaura Leela, in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is Brihaspati, who has come in Gaura Leela to perform and play this pastime. So the first meeting of Lord Chaitanya and Sarvabhauma was just after Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had taken sannyas in Katwa, which was an amazing scene. We're not going to get into it because we have so much limited time, but that's such a powerful scene where Lord Chaitanya takes sannyas from Keshava Bharati, and then he leaves there. He goes to Navadvip. He takes permission from his mother to go to Jagannath Puri, and on his way, en route to Jagannath Puri with exalted devotees like Lord Nityananda and Mukunda Dutt and Jagannanda Pandit and Damodar Pandit. They were just on the outskirts of Jagannath Puri when Lord Chaitanya saw the spire and the flag and the chakra on the top of Jagannath Temple. And when he saw this, he became overwhelmed with a vision of seeing Lord Chaitanya. And he immediately began to run at full force towards the temple of Jagannath. And in this way, he left all the other devotees far behind him because he was in such a state of ecstasy that he just charged in. And when he entered into the Jagannath Temple, he was moving towards Lord Jagannath with the intention and goal to embrace Lord Jagannath and pull him into his heart. And as he got close to the altar, it's described that Lord Chaitanya fell unconscious on the floor before the Lord. Now, this may or may not have been a common experience in the Jagannath temple. I don't know about their Bhaktivedanta manner, but at ISKCON London over the years, we have seen a few people who have fallen on the floor. And I don't know if they were really in states of ecstasy, but they seem to be exhibiting some symptoms. Of course, Srila Prabhupada, this wasn't new to him, and he explained to the devotees in the early days that if someone does this in the temple, then the way that you find out if they're really in ecstasy is that you give them a good kick. But we haven't done that as of yet at ISKCON London. Usually we just give them a good shake and try to wake them up. And more often than not, we find out that usually they're not in some kind of a state of ecstasy. But anyway, Lord Chaitanya was in this state. And then it's described that the sevaks and the sort of guards of Jagannath Puri Temple, they came over to Lord Chaitanya and they basically were ready to expel him, thinking that this is some madman who's coming here and just acting like a fool. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was in the temple at this time, and he saw what had happened, and he recognized within Lord Chaitanya a level of serious spiritual advancement. So he quickly ran over and he asked the guards to know, just leave Lord Chaitanya, just leave him for a moment, leave this sannyasi. Of course, he was unknown to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya at that time, but just leave this sannyasi for a moment. Let me first check to see if he is alive. And he took a piece of cotton and he stuck it under his nose, and he could see that there was still breath, air coming from the nostrils of the Lord. And so he said, no, he's fine. And then he asked his disciples to come, please help me. And they removed Lord Chaitanya and they took him back to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's house, where in a parental mood, Sarvabhauma began to look after Lord Chaitanya and care for him. Now, of course, Lord Chaitanya was still unconscious at this stage, and Sarvabhauma being many years senior, actually, in age to Lord Chaitanya, naturally had this mood of affection towards him. So he began to look after him. And around this time, while Lord Chaitanya was safely resting, but still unconscious in his trance at the house of Sarvabhauma, the devotees, Lord Nityananda, Damodar Panda, Jagadananda, all of these devotees, they arrived finally in Jagannath Puri, and they went to the temple and they heard everyone was in a big commotion about this young sannyasi who had come. So they began to inquire what happened to him, and they heard that he had been taken by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya to his house. At the same time, Gopinathacharya showed up on the scene, and he saw the devotees, and he offered them all respects and obeisances. And then the devotees, recognizing Gopinathacharya, because he's also a great devotee and resident of Navadvipa, but living in Jagannath Puri, they explained to him what had happened with Lord Chaitanya, and Gopinath just went into ecstasy hearing that Lord Chaitanya had come to reside in Jagannath Puri and that he had taken sannyas. And of course, he knew where Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's place was because that was his brother-in-law. So he took them there to the house of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And it's described that the devotees began to have kirtan. And when they were having this kirtan of ecstasy, chanting before Lord Chaitanya, even though Lord Chaitanya was unconscious, but as they chanted the holy names, Lord Chaitanya woke up and began to manifest his beautiful smile and his dazzling effulgence. And all the devotees became so happy and fell into fits of ecstasy. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, being such a wonderful host, he encouraged the devotees to please go for darshan and have your bath in the sea, and then come here and I will feed you all sumptuously, which he did. So there was some time where he was interacting with the devotees, and he was basically kind of stating that, you know, this young sannyasi, he's not really so qualified. He's too young, and he really needs to hear Vedanta. And you know, and the devotees, they began to debate with him, and basically, he was saying that, you know, they explained that this isn't just an ordinary person. Lord Chaitanya is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But Sarvabhauma, he was very, very reluctant to accept this. And as there was a debate going on, Lord Chaitanya, in his utter mood of humility, Trinadapi Sunichena, Tawadapi Sihishuna, Amanina, Manadena, he began to express to the devotees, please, 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 don't debate. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is very senior. In fact, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, his father and Lord Chaitanya's maternal grandfather, Nilambar Chakravarti, were actually very close friends. So therefore, Lord Chaitanya exhibited this mood of subservitorship and to be submissive and accepting that actually Sarvabhauma is my senior, and therefore we should all respect him. Not to mention, he's serving as the chief scholar of the king's court, so therefore we should respect him. And in this way, everyone became calm and peaceful and just listened to what Sarvabhauma had to say. And Sarvabhauma was explaining to Lord Chaitanya that if you want to, you know, maintain your sannyas vows, then it is important that you become very well versed in Vedanta. And in this way, I can teach you. He also, at that time, kind of criticized his guru, Keshava Bharati, saying that he's not really of the highest class, and I can make arrangement for you to take initiation, reinitiation from a greater sannyasi, a greater devotee. But anyway, the devotees, they didn't interrupt, and they just allowed, and Lord Chaitanya agreed, no problem. I am happy to sit and hear from you. And because you're such an exalted person, which is very interesting. And I often try to think how to apply this sometimes when we're preaching, because often if someone is speaking in a way that's not correct, we don't really care about their age. We don't seem to really care about their position or anything. We just want to blast them and, you know, explain the Siddhanta and the philosophy. And sometimes maybe within our own hearts, the mood is not so much for their benefit, but maybe for our own kind of pride and false ego to show off. And, you know, even I know many devotees, they, even with their parents, they sometimes chastise and try to tell them off and instruct them. Often it doesn't really turn out to be such a happy ending because parents don't usually like to be corrected or chastised by their own children. So sometimes it's important, as Lord Chaitanya is showing here, to take the humble position and just be submissive and sometimes just allow them to talk. And that's what Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya did. He just talked and spoke Siddhanta for 7 days. So after 7 days of hearing from Lord Chaitanya, or from Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Lord Chaitanya was just sitting there, humble as can be, and then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was like, I don't really think you're qualified to hear Vedanta, because I've been speaking for 7 days and you haven't said a word. You haven't responded. You haven't reacted. Therefore, I don't think that you are actually understanding anything that I say. And Lord Chaitanya explained, well, please forgive me, but you said that I should just listen. So therefore, I am your obedient servant, and I have just simply been listening to you. And I didn't ask any questions. But since you're inquiring now from me, I do understand Vedanta. I understand Vedanta very clearly. But unfortunately, your explanation of Vedanta is like clouds covering the sun. And Vedanta is like the sun, and naturally its light emanates, but you are simply covering it by your explanation. Now, it's described that Sarvabhauma felt a little bit slighted by the comments of Lord Chaitanya, but he also understood that Lord Chaitanya had sat and listened to him for 7 days without interrupting. So therefore, he also felt a little obliged, and he felt respectful in the sense that he could understand that, you know, if this person had something really heavy to say, and he was rude and arrogant, he would have said that early on in the beginning, but Lord Chaitanya didn't. So then, at this point, Lord Chaitanya begins to express the Vedanta Sutra, or not the Vedanta Sutra, but the Vedanta philosophy according to Vedanta Sutra, and according to the Vedas, and according to using the different Upanishads, in order to prove form and quality of the impersonal realization of the Lord. So that brings us to today's verse, in which Lord Chaitanya is stating that wherever there is an impersonal description in the Vedas mean to establish that everything belonging to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is transcendental and free of mundane characteristics. And of course, just to remind us, in the purport, it explains that having no hands and no legs, but still the Lord is accepting offerings. He has no eyes, yet he sees everything, and he has no ears, yet he hears everything. So it doesn't mean that the Lord doesn't have any of these physical properties or any of this rupa or form, but actually that his form is not mundane like ours, and that the Lord's form is completely transcendental, and in that way, he permeates the entire world in every corner and can see and hear and understand everything that's happening, including in the heart of every living entity, just like us, because the Lord is ultimately situated there. So Lord Chaitanya begins to explain and divulge this deep and profound philosophy. So let's look into and try to understand this philosophy a little bit. So what is the philosophy? So our Gaudiya philosophy is that principle of that there are three primary principles. First one is bhajaniya, which is the object of worship, which means that the Lord, the bhajanakari, or the worshiper, or the bhakta, and the bhajan, the act of worship, or bhakti, that all three of these principles must be present in full in order for there to be pure devotional service and to attain ultimately the highest levels of spiritual realization, which is prema bhakti. So this is, in essence, you could say, the Gaudiya Siddhanta, the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy on Shuddha Bhakti, or pure devotional service. All three of these must be present. Unfortunately, the Mayavad philosophy holds that these, all three of these forms, in one sense, are basically products of the illusory energy, especially the form that we would worship here, the object of our bhajan, the Lord. His form is made of the illusory energy, or maya. So this is the essence of this term, mayavadi. And they hold that Brahman, the formless, undifferentiated, potency-less form of the Supreme Truth, that nothing exists outside of Brahman. And thus, the living being is identical with it. So Brahman, which we're going to discuss more in a moment, the all-pervasive energy of the Lord, is the foundation of everything, and that's all that there is. This is the absolute understanding of the Supreme Truth, and therefore, because we have come from that, we are also ultimately Brahman. But this external form is made of the illusory energy of the Supreme Lord, and there's much more that we could get into with this, and we'll touch upon it in a moment. They also say the devotional service only has momentary value, and it's for less advanced practitioners, because it simply will help us to attain a state of identification with Brahman. And then once we attain that state, or that status of eternal truth, then we can be merged into the eternal truth of Brahman. So once I was unfortunate to have an interaction with someone who was doing some service in the temple, and he was, I didn't realize, I knew that he had been impersonally influenced, but, you know, many of us come with some impersonal influence. But at one point, I heard him speaking with someone else, and what I overheard was heart-wrenching, because he was describing that, yes, you know, the deities in the temple, they're just made of stone and wood and brass. They're not really God. God is ultimately the impersonal energy that permeates everything. And he said, and these deities are not important. They're just a stepping stone for us to become God, to merge with God. And then he said, even you could urinate on the deities and it doesn't make any difference. And at that point, you know, I thought, maybe if there's anyone I'm ever going to kick in the temple, it should be him. But I didn't. I just said, you know, can I speak to you for a minute? And we had a conversation, and he was very fixed on his misunderstanding of the absolute truth, and definitely diametrically opposed. And I can understand also why at that point that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was given the name of Simha Guru. And it's described how if he would see a Mayavadi walking down the streets, that he would actually cross the street and begin to chastise him and ask him, why are you cheating the devotees? Why are you cheating people? Why are you robbing them of the opportunity of devotional service? So that Simha nature was also boiling up in me, but fortunately I didn't unleash on him fully, but I did ask him to leave and not to come back for a while, because he was very, very fixed in that philosophy. So this brings us to a few points and questions, because I've realized over the years that often, many times, devotees, those who come to Krishna consciousness, they do have an impersonal understanding or influence about an understanding of the Supreme Lord. So this brings us to the question of what is Brahman? So if we try to understand this idea of Brahman, then we can see that in essence, the word Brahman is also sometimes in different places used, just stated as Brahma, is used in a generic sense to mean spirit, or the kind of underlying essence or energy of everything. And it's explained that God and the individual souls and the spiritual effulgence of God are all referred to as Brahman. In Sanskrit, its root means the greatest. So this, and we as Gaudiyas, of course, we accept this principle of Brahman. We have no issue with understanding this. And when the word is used in the context that we understand it in connection with Paramatma and Bhagavan, we know that these are the three phases of the Absolute Truth, and that it refers specifically to the impersonal effulgence of the Lord, of Krishna, of Bhagavan. But Brahman is also called the Brahma Jyoti, or the spiritual life, and it's described that as well as being the all-pervasive energy, it is actually, it fills the spiritual world, and when it's transformed by God, it becomes the primordial elements of the material world. That is how it is said and understood to pervade everything, because every element in the material world is ultimately made up of this energy of God, of this Brahma Jyoti, of this Brahman. So, in one sense, Brahman realization, it means that one has to, or one has understood the Sat aspect of the Absolute, which means the eternal understanding that the Lord is ever-existing and, in one sense, all-pervading. And when one realizes this, that this is simply existence beyond all activity, then one can understand that actually there's something more than just the material and the mundane, that there is some other force, some other energy, something higher. And in one sense, we really have to understand that if someone has this type of understanding, that is actually glorious, because the majority of people in the world are just absorbed in the mundane, and they're thinking on the material platform. But someone who has some understanding that there is something more, that there's an all-pervasive nature there, then this is actually wonderful and glorious, and in one sense should be celebrated. So we can understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Sat-Chit and Ananda Vigraha, as explained in the Brahma Samhita. And realization of the impersonal Brahman is realization of his Sat feature, or his aspect of eternity, whereas Paramatma is realization of the Sat and the Chit, so his eternal feature, but also his all-knowing feature. And this is how the Lord, because he permeates everything by entering into it as the Shirdakshai Vishnu form and becomes the Paramatma, or the essence of all things, then he's able to know everything that's happening at all times. So he is eternal and full of knowledge. But when we understand Bhagavan, or we understand Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then we get Sat-Chit and Ananda. And Ananda means the bliss. And this blissful form, when one realizes Supreme Person, he realizes all these aspects of the Absolute in fullness. And one can only experience real joy and happiness when one understands the personal form of the Lord. So we know these different forms of the Lord, the Brahman, the Paramatma, and Bhagavan, as discussed in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2. Srila Prabhupada goes to great depth, and he also continues to explain that it's similar to the sunlight, the sun planet, and the sun god. So in this way, these three features directly relate to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And they're all parts of the Supreme Lord. You cannot separate them from the Supreme Lord. Unfortunately, the Mayavad understanding looks at things a little different. But first, let's look at one who has understood Brahman. So, Brahmavadi. So oftentimes, devotees will refer to anyone who is impersonal as a Mayavadi, and this is incorrect. This is not the correct thing. Just because someone has an impersonal understanding of the Lord does not mean that they are a Mayavadi. There's a clear distinction between these two. So a Brahmavadi is someone who understands the all-pervasive nature of the Supreme Lord, and there is not a problem with that. Their understanding may be limited. They may not have the full grasp of the complete understanding of the Absolute Truth, but at least they have an understanding of the Absolute Truth. And at least they've progressed from the mundane to the spiritual. So therefore, we also know that there are personalities who, great personalities, who are known as Brahmavadis. Even in our the Srimad Bhagavatam, we know that the four Kumaras, they were understood to be Brahmavadis. They believed only in the impersonal form of the Lord until they made their way to the gate of Vaikuntha, where they had the personal darshan of the Supreme Lord. And it's described that by smelling the aroma of the tulsis that had been offered to the Supreme Lord, then their personal conception manifested. But before that, they were Brahmavadis. It's also described that Shukadeva Goswami was a Brahmavadi. And before he heard Srimad Bhagavatam from his father, Srila Vyasadeva, he was also Brahman realized. But he just understood and accepted that Brahman understanding of the Absolute Truth. Only once hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam did his heart become transformed. So like this, many people may exhibit impersonal understanding or leanings, but that does not make them Mayavadis. Hope that makes sense. It just means that they're not aware of the Bhagavan form and they're not attracted to that. That's our job. That's our service. We have to help those persons come to the platform of understanding. Now, the challenge is, well, we do that because bhakti begets bhakti. So we, as devotees who are aspiring bhaktas, who have some taste and attraction at whatever level for the Supreme Lord, we have to help to give that taste to others, because by association of a bhakta, one gets bhakti. Now, the Mayavadis, they're aware of Bhagavan. They're aware of this Bhagavan principle aspect also, but they consider that aspect of the Supreme Absolute to be Maya. They do not accept it. Therefore, their concept and understanding and their philosophy is derogatory towards Bhagavan. It's not out of ignorance that they don't accept it. They have knowledge of it, and they therefore deride Krishna in his form. So Brahmavadis, Brahman are bona fide aspects of the Absolute, but when Brahman is made into the only absolute realization of the Absolute, it's not bad, but it's not offensive. But when Brahman is considered the only aspect and Bhagavan is considered to be Maya, that is offensive. And that's why devotees cannot stand to hear from someone who blasphemes the form of the Lord. Because for us, the form of the Lord is the whole purpose of our entire life. This is where we get our bliss. This is where we get the nectar to meditate on the pastimes and the lila and the teachings of the Lord. This is the essence of our entire life. So to hear someone criticize and blaspheme that, devotees become overwhelmed. So this is the distinction that's really important to get between a Brahmavadi and a Mayavadi. And the Mayavadi specifically derides the form of the Lord with knowledge, not out of ignorance. So I hope that makes a little bit of sense for everyone. So we know that there are different verses from the Bhagavad Gita. And Arjuna inquired, this is in the 12th chapter, in the 12th chapter, he addresses the impersonal and the impersonal. And both are fine, but the impersonal seems to take longer. And here we see those who consider my form as illusion, that they're doomed. So he inquires, which are considered to be more perfect, those who are always properly engaged in your devotional service, or those who worship the impersonal Brahman, the unmanifested? And the Supreme Personality of Godhead says that those who fix their mind on my personal form and are always engaged in worshiping me with great and transcendental faith are considered to be the most perfect. So here we have the Lord speaking it himself perfectly and crystal clearly in the pages of the Bhagavad Gita, that actually both are bona fide, the personal and the impersonal, but he himself in his personal form, he considers those who worship him in his personal form as better. Then we see later, he explains that those whose minds are attached to the impersonal feature, it's very difficult for them to make progress and advancement because it's a longer process. Anyway, we know bhakti is the express elevator, but this other process, we have to go through so many stages and steps on the ladder. Krishna also explains in the 9th chapter that fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature as the Supreme Lord of all that be. So here Krishna clearly says that you're a fool if you deride him specifically in his human form. And they don't really understand things as they are. And he explains that they are bewildered and therefore they become attracted by demoniac and atheistic views. And in that condition, their hopes for real liberation and their fruitive activities, it's all defeated. So they basically lose out. So the Mayavadis say that the world was created by Maya, that it's false, and they actually, that there is no living entity, but only one spiritual effulgence, and we're all part of that Brahman. Further, they say God is imaginary, and that when the Supreme Absolute Truth is befooled by the eternal external energy, Maya, he becomes a jiva, or a living entity. And upon hearing all these nonsensical ideas from the non-devotee, a devotee is greatly afflicted as if his heart and soul were broken. So this is Srila Prabhupada's statement and purport to Chaitanya. Charitamrita Antya Lila. Like this. So Therefore, these Brahmavadis, although they perform so much austerities and penance, but they still fall down. Even if they try to reach liberation in the Brahman, they eventually fall down because you cannot stay there because they're not satisfied because they don't have personal relationship, which is giving bliss. And we all crave this. So like that. And then, of course, this famous verse from the Brahma Samhita, I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, whose effulgence is the source of the undifferentiated Brahman, mentioned in the Upanishads, being differentiated from the infinity of glories and of the mundane universe, appears as the indivisible, infinite, limitless truth. So, Brahma Samhita, by the way, Lord Chaitanya said that this Brahma Samhita is the highest shastra for understanding the personal form and the absolute truth. So this is a very important and powerful shastra for us to understand. And the purport, anyway, there's so many things, kind of running out of time and sometimes a little too much information. But the mundane universe is created by Maya, and it's one of the infinite external manifestations accommodating space, time, and gross things. The impersonal aspect of Godhead, the non-differentiating Brahman, is far above this principle of mundane creation. But even the non-differentiated Brahman is only the external effulgence emanating from the boundary wall of the transcendental realm of Vaikuntha, displaying the tri-quadrantal glory of Govinda. The non-differentiated Brahman is indivisible, hence is also one without a second, and is the infinite and residual explanation. So this is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's purport in this Brahma Samhita prayer, which we can study for hours and days on end. And of course, the Lord says, Brahmanohi pratishtaham amritasya svasya cha shashvatasya chadharmasya sukasya kantaskasya cha. And I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman, which is immortal and perishable and eternal and is the constitutional position of ultimate happiness. That's again Bhagavad Gita. And this verse from the Sri Yashu Upanishad, where it is described that the devotee is praying for the Lord to please remove that dazzling effulgence so that I can see your beautiful shining real face. So like that. So that is the end of my presentation. Sorry, I rushed through a little bit just to try to finish and complete, but I hope that some of what I've said has made a little sense, and at some points maybe that you hadn't heard before also were opened up, and or if not, then at least you were reminded to remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So if anyone has any questions or comments or anything that they would like to reflect back, then I would be most happy to hear and or engage with that.
Thank you so much, Janitai. What a wonderful class. We are very fortunate to be able to hear the glories and the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya from your mouth. There are no questions in the chat yet. I just make a little overview of what was presented. So in the beginning, we heard about the life and history of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, understand better who's this personality, who's this associate of Lord Chaitanya. We heard how Lord Chaitanya came to Jagannath Puri, how he fainted and was later on cared for in the parental mood by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and eventually how they came into a discussion. And Lord Chaitanya heard for 7 days about Vedanta Sutra, and eventually he manifested his opinion. He said that he was covering the sun of the Vedanta like the clouds. And then we heard a bit in these last moments about Gaudiya philosophy, the Lord Bhakti and the Bhakta as the ingredients, and the impersonalist philosophy in the Brahmavadi and the Mayavadi aspects. So I would like to ask if possible, if you can elaborate in the aspect that you mentioned of the listening mood that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu manifested his humility while listening, and how can we apply that in our preaching, in our life when we are preaching. And if you could elaborate a little bit on that, I'll be very glad. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Jaya Prabhu. So Yeah, this is a very important aspect. I'm reminded immediately of one pastime with Srila Prabhupada, where he met one gentleman at Bhaktivedanta Manor, if my recollection is correct, and in his rooms there in Bhaktivedanta Manor. And this person was from a background of dealing with, I think, race cars or something like that. And Srila Prabhupada sat with him for almost an hour, maybe 2 hours, something like that, and just talked about cars and listened with him. And the devotees, they were quite astonished and amazed. And afterwards, they said to Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada, you never injected your Krishna consciousness. You never told him that he's in Maya. You never told him that, you know, he shouldn't talk about racing cars, but he should listen and hear about Krishna, who is the supreme absolute truth. And Srila Prabhupada said, anyway, he was not really so ready. So, you know, but I just sat and listened. Now, we have to think, what is the potency sometimes of just being with someone? Now, of course, I'm not necessarily suggesting that we're as spiritually advanced as Srila Prabhupada or as Lord Chaitanya, and that we can sit with someone who's talking Mayavad philosophy for 7 days. Please do not misunderstand that I'm not encouraging this, because most of us would probably be adversely influenced. But the principle is that, as they say, that we have two of these and only one of these. So sometimes it's better to listen and hear twice as much before we speak. And in this way, it means that we can have a very positive influence by showing people that we're open and receptive to hearing what they say, even though we may not necessarily agree with it. But the nature of the false ego is such that everyone thinks they're right. Everyone thinks they already know everything and they've got it figured out. And as soon as anyone starts to challenge or test that, the false ego flares up and throws out its defense mechanism, which basically stops us from really hearing anything. So that means if I'm interacting with someone and they have some big philosophy, now, of course, I mentioned this gentleman earlier, but he was really in quite an offensive space. And also, he didn't want to hear anything. And I wasn't really prepared to sit and listen to him blaspheme the deities and the process of bhakti. But there have been many times where I'll sit with new neophyte, younger devotees or first-time comers, and they need to have a space where they can espouse their philosophy. And you can see that sometimes just allowing them to talk, they kind of make a fool of themselves, and they realize it, and other people also realize it. But when they feel like they're able to speak and be heard, and this principle works for devotee relationships also, when we allow someone the space to be heard and we genuinely listen, didati pratigrinati guyam akyati prichati, when we actually hear the mind of a devotee being revealed, then it creates a space in their heart where they're willing to also then hear from that devotee. So if someone sits and speaks to us for some time, and then they may say, what do you think? You know, I had this experience with the devotee who preached to me in the beginning, who was trying to encourage me to come closer to Krishna. In the beginning, he was always telling me I was in Maya, I needed to do this, I needed to do that. And I just kept saying to him, you know, get away from me with your Hare Krishna business. You know, I don't really need to know about it. But then he stopped trying to preach to me and he started just being around. And because he wasn't always talking about Krishna, I started to inquire from him. And because I started to ask him questions, oh, what's going on at the temple? How come you're not talking about the temple so much? You know, have you learned anything new at the temple? Then he would start to share and I would be receptive to hearing. So we have to create a space where someone inquires, not necessarily that we have to create a space where we just chastise and correct people all the time. In one sense, that may also be there, but learning how to do that in a delicate and tasteful way where we can traverse the nature of the false ego to actually really penetrate and go into the heart of the matter like that. I don't know if that answers your question or if I just tried to waste a lot of time.
No, it's good. It's good to have your perspective. Very nice. Thank you so much. There's another question appearing on the chat. Amrita Vilasi Dasi is asking, are Brahmavadis aware of the personal aspect of the Lord and they are just not ready to accept it? Or is it that they don't know about it at all?
It may be either. It may be either. I mean, I would say that probably I was mostly influenced by Brahmavad before coming. Many people who come from a sort of pseudo-spiritual background or they're kind of new agey spirituality is often about, you know, we're all one, we're all connected with God, which in one sense is amazing. At least people are trying to connect with God, you know, we should appreciate that. But of course, I grew up with a Christian background, knowing that there was supposed to be a God, one God. But my experience was that anyone who claims that there's a God or one God, they all like to fight about it with each other. And I was so not into this whole fighting principle. Why is everybody fighting over whose God is the right God, this God, that God, my God, your God? You know, so I was more into accepting that, no, it's all cool, man. It's all one. We're all one. It's all, you know, and in that sense, you can be influenced by this thinking that I'm also God, but actually we are also God. We don't disagree. We're simultaneously one and different from God. Qualitatively, we're the same as God. Quantitatively, we're different. So there may be an understanding of the personal form, but there may not be also. So it can be either or. But the distinction is that the Mayavadis are clearly aware that there is a philosophy of Bhagavan, of the Supreme Person, and they deride that. That's the important distinction. Does that answer the question and make sense?
Yes. Thank you so much.